Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Cry Like a Boy, a Euronews original service and podcast that explores how the pressure to be a man can harm families and societies. Stay with us as we travel across the African continent to meet men who defy centuries-old stereotypes. I am Khoposo Budibe with you from Johannesburg in South Africa. In this follow-up conversation with our European gender expert Hilde van der Schook and Burundi-based activist Grace Francoise Nibizi, we will continue exploring the Abatanga Mucho, a community group in Burundi comprising of men who are carrying out a revolution against gender-based violence through theatre, changing established views and mentalities, and fighting against domestic violence. We urge you to listen back to the first half of this conversation via our website, euronews.com/programs/cry-like-a-boy. Now, there is a growing school of thought that the attainment of gender equality requires the engagement of men and boys, the main perpetrators of gender injustice and upholders of patriarchal norms, as I have alluded to earlier. What is your view on this, and how can the involvement of men and boys, as we've seen with the Abatanga Mucho, be scaled up? I'll actually pose this question to you first, Grace Francoise.
In the past year, we have realized that all activities we've been doing, we never really engaged with men and boys. It's like we were just talking among us, among women, we were trying to do something to empower women and girls so that they can at least be empowered, financally and socially. But it's very important to even educate boys and women and men, because sometimes what they are doing is what they have been learned. That's how they grew up. So it's very important to educate them and tell them that although our culture say this and this, and although they have been socialized, consider that women have to be passive, women have to be submissive, women have to be dependent on men, women are powerless, women are weak. All those, they have to be educated and tell them, to show them that it's not true. And that goes through education, through sensitization, and through engaging men and boys so that they can have another view, showing them that women are not powerless. Women are powerful. And that's why I kept on saying the job Abatanga Mucho are really doing is fantastic, is excellent. Unfortunately, they are really not supported so that they can cover the whole country, cover the whole provinces. I wish even their model could be exported to other countries, because, as I said in the beginning, it's the same all over African country. It's the same in Europe. It's the same all over the world.
Thank you so much for that response. Hilde, your response to the same question.
So in terms of engaging boys and men, yes, I do think that's a crucial aspect of achieving gender justice, because indeed we need systematic change. Like, any systematic change needs to involve the whole community, and the whole community consists of men, women, girls, boys, and women who or people who don't identify as either gender. And to achieve gender justice needs to be a community effort involving everyone. And certainly you know, to have programs and campaigns that particularly talk to men and boys to challenge them, but also to take their challenges seriously, because it's not like, as this Cry Like a Boy series is showing us as well, like, masculinity is harmful not just to women. It's toxic masculinity is harmful to boys and men as well. I'll give an example. The Norwegian police had this campaign a year or two ago that I think was really interesting. They took this concept, in Norwegian it's called kjernekar, which basically translates to like a really properly good guy. They made this big campaign, spread over buses and everything, basically saying that a kjernekar, a good guy, is someone who will stop his friends if they are kind of stepping over the line with a girl, if they are harassing someone, if they are going home with or taking home someone who is too drunk to consent to any kind of sex, you know, basically to try to play on that notion that guys want to be good guys, to make guys actually check each other's tendencies to act on the more toxic and destructive aspects of expectations to masculinity. And I think that was a really interesting campaign, and I think it's a good way forward.
Françoise, is the word getting out about toxic masculinities in Burundi? Are people getting information, and is there sufficient information about it?
During this week, I posted on my WhatsApp status. Actually, I wanted to know exactly whether Burundian know if they really have, especially Burundian men and boy, know anything about toxic masculinity. First of all, I wanted to know if there is a word in Kirundi which says about toxic masculinity. And I was very shocked and amused on about the questions I got. I got like 50 different answers concerning the toxic masculinity word itself. But at the end, I retain like two words. One is akanyarigabo. Akanyarigabo in Kirundi means that a man who is really boasting. It doesn't really explain the toxic masculinity. It explains how a man or a boy has to stand on himself. Whether he's doing bad or good, he has to stand up on his decisions. And that showed me that the toxic masculinity is not really in their minds, in their head and heart, and which means it's something which has to be really talked about more, educate men and boys. Actually, the whole community need to be educated so that they can see that toxic masculinity is really very bad. It's very harmful, and it has got very direct consequence, whether to women themselves and to the whole family and to the whole country. So toxic masculinity in Burundi has to be really talked more about. It's good that we have that group of people who have realized that some of our norms in our culture are really very harmful. And I believe it's going to take a long time to change, because as I said in the beginning, it's something which is rooted in our culture. But I believe it's going to be successful at the end.
Hilda, can you tell us about your experience working with the Abatanga Mucho as a European woman? What were your observations? Talk to us about that.
So I traveled to Burundi. It was the first time in my life that I was there, something like 9 years ago. And traveling out in the countryside and meeting these men, I remember my translator who had helped me set up the interviews. He told me that many of the men wanted to have the interviews with a wife by their side. And I remember thinking, I don't think that's a good idea, because you know, he might not speak as freely, and she will, you know, because I was expecting her then just to like back him up and be supportive and be difficult to get any critical question. What I did get was this really, really interesting dynamic where these men would talk sometimes with a bit of humor and also with always with loads of kind of regret and self-reflection about the way they had mistreated their wife who was sitting next to them. And she would be kind of supplementing his narrative and correcting him, which he would just completely accept. And I realized that this was really not just a story about the man's change, but a story also about the woman's change and the couple's change and the change of a whole family from like one that was dominated by a very toxic type of masculinity to one where the man would, you know, start to accept that he should listen to his wife, collaborate with his wife, do some of the wife's work, but also that the wife would accept that, you know, her man would do women's work sometimes. And she would be expected to, you know, step out of the expectations of femininity. So it was interesting how it was really a journey for the both of them. That was one of my kind of main observations, how interesting that was and how that had kind of like brought the family closer together. And another thing was just the passion that these men had for, you know, spreading the word and convincing, you know, true art, theater, just like discussions, to convince the other men in their communities that, you know, they needed to make these changes as well in order to be happy. Not just because it was right, not just because there was some kind of like moral imperative, but, you know, because it was good for them, because it was good for the community, because they would feel better. They would do better by stepping out of that toxic masculinity. And that was fascinating to me. And I'm thrilled now because it's been a while since I did this research and I've been thrilled to listen to the podcasts that you guys have been doing and to see that the movement is still thriving and to see many of the men that I met, to see that how sustainable it has proven to be, I think is fantastic.
Hilde, how do you see the next steps for the status of women in the world? Are you pessimistic? Are you optimistic? And why, if you're pessimistic or optimistic?
I must say I'm fundamentally an optimist, but I do think that humanity is moving forward, even when it looks like we're moving backwards. If you take a step back and look at the bigger picture, we are progressing. It's getting better. In Europe and the US, like in Western countries, the Me Too movement, I think, was a watershed. And it showed how there was, like, even in a country like Norway, where we do tend to get a little complacent and think that, well, you know, we've achieved gender justice, we're good, you know, we're so equal. There was this conversation to be had about the really, really toxic, hidden impacts of gender roles and gender expectations and gender hierarchy in the workplace, in cultural life, so on and so forth. And we were able to have that conversation. It has brought up this shift in the public perception in terms of, you know, taking women seriously and taking women's experiences seriously. And of course you get backlashes. Of course you get, you know, you get those who would say that, like, you know, who don't like phrases like toxic masculinity because they see that as kind of like calling all masculinity toxic. And again, like, we will always have these discussions. We will always have the backlashes. We will always have, you know, pockets of progress and pockets of regression. But I think overall, I'm optimistic. I see more awareness, more kind of sophisticated understandings of the negative impact of gender inequality, more willingness to see kind of the hidden impact of gender inequalities and the hidden inequalities themselves. So yeah, we'll go up and down, back and forth, backlashes, progress. But in the grand scheme of things, I'm an optimist.
Can I ask that same question of you as well, Françoise?
Yeah, of course, I'm optimistic. I'm very hopeful. because I can see what Abatanga Mocho are doing. And as I mentioned, it's going to take a long time because, but at least it started. It started. And what Abatanga Mocho are trying to do is to change the way of living. And changing a way of living of a community, it can't just happen in 1 year or 2 years. So I'm very hopeful that at the end, even though it's going to take a long time, it's going to happen. And for the moment, I even know that not all men that change their ways after being at or receiving messages or testimonies from Abatanga Mocho change. I know it's a long process. In order to be an Umutanga Mocho, a man has to show various commitments and expose himself as somebody who can be a peer. So it's a long process, and Abatanga Mocho principles and values somehow it's very hard to Burundian men and boys, because in the beginning they were used to something else and which were very easy for them. So it won't go happen in 1 day, in 1 year or 5 years, but I'm very hopeful that at the end it's going to change. It's going to change and have that, and we're going to have that justice, gender justice we're fighting for. Thank you.
Thank you so much to the both of you. Thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute learning experience to be speaking with you. This show has been produced with me, Khoposo Budibe, Clarice Shaka in Burundi, Marta Rodriguez Martinez, Lilo Montalto, Monella, and Naira Davlashian in Lyon. Special thanks go to Laurie Martinez and Studio Oshenta for helping us produce this podcast under special conditions. I would like to thank our guests, Grace Francoise Nibizi and Hilde Osland van der Skook. For more information on Cry Like a Boy, a Euronews original series and podcast, go to euronews.com/crylikeaboy to find opinion pieces, videos and articles on the topic. Follow us on Twitter. At Euronews is our Twitter handle, and we are euronews.tv on Instagram. Also, share with us your own stories of how you changed and challenged your view on what it means to be a man. Use hashtag cry like a boy. If you're a French speaker, this podcast is also available in French. Dans la tête des hommes is the name of the podcast series.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.